Welcome to the SIS Off the Charts Football Podcast. I am your host, Bryce Rossler, and I am joined today by the SIS Football R&D team and disgraced former host, Matt Manicharian. Today, we are going to be talking about all the action in free agency from a quantitative standpoint. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about a lost hero, Aaron Donald. I already miss him.
Lost hero is really dramatic.
So there's a good argument he's the best defensive player ever, I think. I think that's how we could frame the discussion there. I personally scouted him coming out of Pitt, and like a lot of people, I missed on him. I thought he was good. I thought he was a hustle player. I thought that he was off the ball incredibly quickly. I didn't see 5 years in a row of being the best defensive player in the league. I'm not shocked by it. I thought he was going to be a good player, but there were concerns about his arm length and his size generally at the time, and it's almost comical to think back on that now.
This might sound like I'm sort of reducing his accomplishments or whatever, but to what extent does our assessment of him being as good as he was or is how much is that driven by where he lined up and the position being like a little bit less of a flashy position than corners or edge rushers or whatever?
Well, I mean, I think he's better at his position than any other defensive player in the NFL has been in this millennium. So like it becomes interesting when you put him against your Deion Sanderses, you know, your LTs.
Right. That's like sort of the comparison I'm drawing, I guess.
But yeah, his dominance for that, I don't know if it's about glamour or non-glamour, but about his ability to, yeah, maybe what you're getting at, like his ability to shine despite not playing a position that you usually notice. I guess, that's something.
And I guess, I mean, the parallel, I suppose, is with Jason Kelce, who also played a position that is not something that people talk about and became, you know, there are some external factors that made him more visually relevant in sort of NFL circles. But both of those guys absolutely sort of outshone their position sort of generally.
But I think you'd have to be a pretty big homer to like even Kelce, amazing. First
oh, yeah, sure.
Not Aaron Donald.
Yeah, that I totally buy. I tweeted this when I learned about the news, like, and in talking about like positional value and whatever, I can tell you the player IDs in our database of like 10 people. And I think 9 of them are quarterbacks and 1 of them is Aaron Donald. So like that gives you a sense for sort of like the relevance of the player and how often I'm looking him up.
Yeah, I think it's like a major credit to him to make the defensive tackle position flashy as it is now, but as flashy as it can be. Because he's kind of that newer prototypical size defensive tackle with that speed, with that size and speed. When I always thought about defensive tackle, you always think of like the big, you know, 350-pound Casey Hamptons of the world to just eat up space and not be as dynamic as what Aaron Donald has been over the length of his career.
I think he's like definitionally not prototypical. He's the best, but he's not prototypical at all.
Yeah, I guess it's a new prototype.
But I think to James' point, we've seen a run recently of teams trying to sort of capture that lightning in the bottle where you get guys who are a bit lighter, maybe not as light as Aaron Donald, but you're looking for guys with like a super fast 10-yard split, quick off the ball, and people just haven't been able to replicate it or even come close.
Right. I guess the prototype changes in the modern passing NFL of like what that really means. But I still think you'd have to consider like Warren Sapp more of the prototype of a three technique, even though this is the most ridiculous individual skill, Aaron Donald's get off that we've seen in the NFL. Yeah.
I guess like the closest guy now would be maybe Quinnen Williams. That's the kind of the first one that comes to mind, but it's still not.
Couple tiers away, huh?
Yeah.
I think I said this to you guys before. I think of John Randall when I think of like the short three technique, explosive, only a one gap player, really. But I mean, if you start betting on 6'1" guys to play three technique, I think you might have a hard time.
Yeah, the guys that you see getting drafted, you know, sort of at the top half of the first round, who are playing more on the interior, are still the sort of like crazy athletic, you know, a lot of length, just monstrous dudes, which Donald does not. You know, you don't see a lot of guys who have that sort of shape, even if their production is sort of more analogous to what Donald did.
You guys got Donald or Watt?
I go Donald. I could see the argument. It's close.
Full career, like, or now I'm
full career.
Oh, Donald.
He doesn't even know which Watt you're talking about, Bryce.
Yeah, we got the Steelers fan here.
throwing out Derek Watt, right?
Alex, do you want to mix it up? You want to advocate for Watt?
I don't think so. I will admit that, like, I'm a little bit colored by sort of the way that the back end of his career ended up going in terms of, like, missing time. And he was still pretty productive when he was on the field, but that sort of colors a little bit of my perception of things. So it doesn't feel like there was that consistency for, like, a long stretch where it's just unquestioned number one guy for 6 years or whatever.
That body gave out on him.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. All right. Well, Aaron Donald, we hardly knew ye. Let's talk about free agency. So we've done this for a couple of years now, but for the uninitiated, Alex, would you like to give a primer on what the exercise we're going to be doing today is?
Yeah, this is definitely not a perfect way of framing free agency, but basically the idea is if we...
Wait, you're breaking one of the core promises of football analytics, which is perfect information at all times.
Yeah, well, I'm violating that by being core tenet of myself and couching everything forever. So basically, we want to take free agency and try and value the sort of loss of value for teams and also sort of like the potential value of that the players are going to give their new teams. So we can use total points, our player value metric, and sort of multiple years of information to try and get a sort of projection into not just next year, but multiple years of player performance. And for this purpose, we can use like 3 years. You know, you can make different decisions. Obviously, players get cut, you know, 1 year into new deals all the time and that sort of thing. But I think having a 3-year projection is useful, particularly when you're comparing sort of younger players to older players. You give the younger players a little more opportunity to sort of like project into their age, whereas the older players are going to decline. But basically using a 3-year weighted average to project 3 years into the future, including an age adjustment for each player. And then we can basically just say, okay, these players left. You know, for in terms of looking at how teams performed in terms of free agency, we're going to look at basically what that player was projected to do in 2024 and what sort of the team that they left is losing and what the team that they're going to is gaining. So that's sort of the framework that we're talking about here. And there's going to be some limitations. First of all, there might be guys who have sort of been announced to have signed that we won't have as part of this conversation. And then the sort of the losses of from a team perspective, there are players who are still free agents. And so they might still return to their teams. They might go to another team. So there's a little bit of uncertainty there as well.
So in case the listener is allergic to nerds, basically it's total points gained and lost due to free agency, with Alex doing some stuff to basically account for how good you've been over the past few years and kind of projecting forward how good we expect you to be, doing a little bit more than just the raw total points. Remedial disclaimer finished.
Yeah. And we can use the, you know, we can do this for any player. So we can kind of get a sense for like, okay, this guy signed, he's the X best player in his position group overall, that in terms of his like 3-year projection. That's sort of how we can frame the players.
So what would you say are the pitfalls of such an analysis?
I think one of the things that we will struggle to handle well is injury stuff. So like Aaron Rodgers, or, you know, just guys who miss, you know, large chunks of time that we don't necessarily think are like something that we would expect to be happening in the future.
Yeah, I don't expect a 40-year-old playing on MetLife turf injured. Yeah.
Well, to miss the entire year, essentially, you know, that informs his average in a way that we wouldn't necessarily project in the future. So the injury stuff, while I do think that, you know, past injury projects future injury and that sort of thing to some extent, there will be certain kinds of injuries that we will include in a player's historical record that we wouldn't necessarily project going forward. And then the other thing that we have, the nice thing about going back 3 years for positions like defensive back that have a lot of variability is that you can kind of smooth out some of the weirdness that happens year over year in terms of defensive back production. But for guys like Brian Branch, you know, guys who are younger, they don't have that historical record. Obviously, he's not a free agent, but just in terms of like where players rank among their positions, you might have players who have kind of funky projections when they've had really good or really bad performance in sort of smaller samples.
So he's not a free agent, but are we counting him in this? Is he included here as like a
player? He's on the, he's not lost or added. He's just,
he's on the list.
I was going to say the limitation here is that like we're boiling every player down to one number, and we don't recommend that as a way of understanding football generally.
Yeah, I mean, it's useful. And I guess the sort of standard caveat applies, I suppose, that we talk about with total points is like it's we think it's really good for evaluating within the position. We have some concerns about the cross position thing because it's really tough to evaluate across positions. And the just total points is attempting to do that.
Confidence. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a lot more confidence than if you didn't have something like this.
Right.
Right. If you didn't have a framework for sort of comparing across positions, then you have almost no shot.
Well, we're pretty confident our number 5 defensive end was better than our number 15 defensive end.
Yeah.
Way that we may not be across positions.
Yeah.
All right. So now that we've talked about how pointless this exercise is, let's get into it. Alex, who is the team that gained the most in free agency?
Yeah. So it's funny because I believe that this team was at the bottom of this list last year. And right now, a little bit, it's a little bit funky because of the aforementioned Aaron Donald, but the Rams have actually done pretty well so far. Last year, they sort of had such a clear, we thought was such a sort of empty roster, except for a couple of stars, and they obviously really surprised. And in, you know, last offseason, they lost guys like Jalen Ramsey and that sort of thing. And this year, they've added a couple of guys, Darius Williams, Cameron Curl, Jonah Jackson. Technically, they might be a little bit higher than they should be because Donald is included as like a remaining free agent because he's, you know, theoretically could sign with a team. I don't know if that's actually
he's just not being included because he didn't go anywhere else.
Yeah, he hasn't been confirmed to go elsewhere.
Not be in first place in terms of like net total points gained.
Yeah, so that's a little bit funky, but they are, for what it's worth, almost 20 points clear of the next highest team in terms of like next season difference. So that's pretty good for them, and you know, it reflects sort of the way that team is sort of their trajectory has really changed in a year.
Yeah, I like the Cameron Curl signing for them. I also really like the Jonah Jackson signing, which might come back to bite me. He did not have a great year in Detroit last year, but he was dealing with quite a bit of injuries. So I think maybe, like you alluded to, Alex, like this exercise isn't particularly great about handling injuries, but I think he probably has a bit more value than his total points numbers this past season would reflect if he can come back fully healthy. Now, Detroit let him walk, and there's some cap considerations there for sure, but maybe their doctors know something that I don't know, but he has been pretty darn good player whenever he's been healthy the past few years.
You guys each made me think of something else that we should point out. Number one, we don't care about cap for this exercise. So it's like, we're not thinking about that for this exercise. But yeah, when you add that in, that's obviously a different, but we're just looking at basically like, did you get better in the last couple weeks or not? And in terms of the Rams, Alex, you say they're number one because they've added the most net total points. But part of that is that they just haven't lost a lot of total points. They don't actually lose in terms of the raw value gain, sort of. Which, in case you're like, we're really Darius Williams, Cameron Curl, and they added the most. That's just to say because they also didn't lose anything. They didn't, besides Aaron Donald, they didn't have much to lose.
Yeah, and well, we might talk about another team that, you know, added two players who started at quarterback for other teams, and therefore might have a lot of total points. And they're not at the top of this list, which sort of indicates the quality of the quarterbacks being added. But yeah, we're just talking about like the players who were added to the roster, the Rams aren't necessarily leading, but they're not. I mean, it's not like they're bad. They would be one of the more productive teams this offseason if all we cared about was who was added to the roster.
Yeah, I'm with you, Bryce. Going back to Cameron Curl, I think that's my favorite signing that they made. I think he's a really good player. We've added him like somewhere in the 20s in terms of like best safeties in the league over the past couple of years. He's been like pretty consistently in like that 30 total points per year range, which is solid. That's like that's a good starting safety. I'm surprised he was so available. I like the signing.
I guess the only other thing would be maybe the Colby Parkinson signing. Tyler Higbee down with an injury. It'll be interesting to see what they run with their tight end they drafted last year. I think Brian Allen's his name. Go two tight end sets. I know Colby was more of a blocking tight end in Seattle, so see if they deploy Kyren Williams a little bit more. Add in Jonah Jackson, beef up the offensive line, and go that route.
All right, so do we want to go next on this list, or do we want to talk about the team that actually added the most? We could stick with the Cameron Curl theme, talk about the team that actually added the most, which is the Commanders. But in terms of net, they're 17. So a lot of stuff moving around there.
Yeah, part of that is having multiple quarterbacks who have played a decent amount departing the team. But, you know, that is one of the vagaries of using total points when the backup quarterbacks have actually been participating and they've been mixing and matching and that sort of thing. But yeah, and obviously this is sort of an extension of what they were doing at the trade deadline as well. So they've had a lot of turnover if you also include sort of during the 2023 season. And, you know, there's the NFC East saw a decent amount of turnover with the exception of people complaining about the Cowboys. But hopefully, I don't know, you know, a lot of times sort of churn to this extent doesn't necessarily result in a lot. And that's sort of what we see in where they rank because they lost a lot of guys and gained a lot of guys. And it's not entirely clear that they how to what extent they improved.
Alex, if you thought that the Rams depth chart was bare last year and on the sonar pages that we have on 3013.com was as blue as you've ever seen, Washington will make you reimagine just how weak a roster could be when looking at it just at the moment. Can you name any quarterbacks on their roster? Didn't think so. So like, yeah, they did lose two quarterbacks, but they also don't have any quarterbacks. I think Jake Fromm might be the answer, and that makes me nervous.
Well, they're Mariota, theoretically going to be adding someone in the relatively near future. One hopes.
If they could say.
Hopefully a few.
I was going to say, their roster is barren, but I did want to point out the one signing that I know you would love by them, Bobby Wagner, just entering his prime now. I know you've been a big fan of his over the last couple of years, so wanted to make sure to shout that one out.
What is he doing this for?
I imagine money.
It is the sort of thing that I would say from an analytical perspective, we're like, if we're again talking about limitations, like guys like Wagner who get a lot of sort of stat sheet and related production in part because of the way that the like defensive scheme allows them to participate in the game does make it a little bit difficult for us to measure like the individual contribution of that player and kind of separate it from the guys up front and that sort of thing. So I think Wagner's a decent example of a guy who probably is getting a little overvalued by total points, but from that perspective, he has been doing pretty well the last couple of years, even despite sort of bouncing around.
I couldn't disagree.
I'm going to go Team Bryce here. Shocking move, but yeah.
Seahawks fans were more upset about Wagner leaving than Jordan Brooks leaving, which is astonishing.
Well, that has to do with the years of love there. Right, that's not like who's going to help me more next year, right?
I think it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
I look at the guaranteed money column, and I'm pretty sure Jordan Brooks won that.
Yeah, Jordan Brooks. The interesting thing about the Jordan Brooks signing is that he was signed by a Shanahan coach, and it's kind of interesting because that coaching tree likes to pick on linebackers. So whenever they sign a guy who can take away what they like to do, it's probably a pretty good indication that that player is not a bad player. So good for Jordan Brooks.
You think in Miami, they'll play him mostly off the ball or on the ball?
Off the ball. Off the ball.
Off the ball, like exclude, like he's a Mike. He's excluded. He's their Mike now.
He was, I don't know if he's their Mike. He was the Will in Seattle, but I think he can play Mike.
I'm interested to see what that's a good transition to another team that, was there a team that added more raw points than the Dolphins? Oh, I guess we just talked about that.
Yeah.
They're up there too. The Dolphins.
That's just rough, isn't it, Alex?
But they also, I mean, they, you know, both them and the Commanders have a lot of gain, but also a lot of loss. Obviously, Christian Wilkins being the sort of big name, but also Van Ginkle as well.
Robert Hunt got him 100 mil.
Yeah. So it's the Dolphins have a lot of turnover and they're going to have some real questions sort of up front on both sides of the ball as a result of that.
Yeah. They lost enough that like I would say that their roster was fully in shambles for a minute there. You look at Wilkins, Van Ginkle, Hunt, Baker was a starting linebacker for them. Brandon Jones started a lot of the time. Raekwon Davis was starting a lot of time for them. Connor Williams at center. That's two of the interior linemen right there. A couple other of the safeties. Xavien Howard also. Their roster was really not looking good. But all of a sudden, Kendall Fuller, Shaq Barrett, Jordan Brooks, they did kind of fill in. It's a lot of turnover, which makes me nervous. But they really did kind of fill in a lot of the holes. And I think now they're just trying to patch up that offensive line.
You don't think the jig is up in Miami?
Listen, I think, what do you think the floor is for Tua? $125 million guaranteed?
Oh, I thought you meant...
I think the floor is him being on the floor.
Yeah, that's what I was... That's where my head went.
What do you mean by the jig is up?
They're going to have to pay Tua soon.
But I mean, they're going to pay Tua... They're in a better cap situation today than they were in at the start of free agency.
They have to pay Tua, and Tyreek Hill is getting older.
And Tyreek Hill is getting into more trouble.
Yes.
I think you can make a case to try to trade Tyreek Hill, as crazy as that sounds. But if you get off Tyreek Hill and force Tua to show you what he is on the last year that you have him guaranteed under contract.
I don't think you want
to. You don't want to find out?
I think.
Would you rather find out, or would you rather just pay them both $100 million a year? And
but does he already know?
So here's how I think about this. If I am of the mindset that I need to get rid of a player like Tyreek Hill in order to evaluate my quarterback, I think I already have my answer about my quarterback.
I think that their answer, Mike McDaniel's answer, is different than yours.
It might be.
He's interesting because he's pretty smart.
He's definitely smarter than me, but humans aren't always right. So people make mistakes.
Yeah, I think that what ends up happening is a deal that's probably like a 5-year deal with like 2 to 2.5 of the years basically guaranteed. And the absolute floor for that being Kirk Cousins, $100 million over 2 years. And I think it'll be a bunch more. I don't know if the line between Tua and Kirk Cousins is that significant in either direction.
Oh, but I don't think it is. I think Kirk Cousins is much better than Tua.
They're in the same tier for me, but I respect your opinion. But like, he's going to get more than that.
You said that wasn't convincing.
But if they're in the same, you respect my opinion.
I respect your opinion. I'm not Tua non over here. I'm just saying I think you can win a Super Bowl with him.
Yeah, but the bar we're getting for quarterbacks you can win a Super Bowl with is getting lower by the year.
Is it though? Is it like Kirk Cousins kind of like the Mendoza line of like a win with quarterback right now?
No. I think Kirk's a little better than that. I'm not a big Kirk Cousins supporter. Who is the Mendoza line?
Brock Purdy.
That's pretty good.
Your one.
That's pretty good.
I think Bryce has him below the Mendoza line though.
I think that's ridiculous. But that Purdy's below the Mendoza line?
Yeah.
It's hard because you can't say, I mean, I find it really hard to say that a guy who almost won a Super Bowl, you can't win a Super Bowl.
With the exception of Rex Grossman.
No, because those would be a win in spite of situation. So I think Bryce is saying if Purdy won, it would be an in spite of.
Oh. Mm.
Yeah. Not that it's impossible. It's that it's really hard and everything else needs to be perfect. You know, kind of like the 49ers.
It's just the analysis of stuff. We're talking about like batting averages. We're talking about hitters.
We're using a metaphor here, Bryce.
We're talking 20%.
I'm extending the metaphor. All right, we're getting
baseball talk with Bryce Rossler.
We're getting off of this. So quarterback talk. Let's keep up with the quarterback talk, and let's give James the floor to talk about his beloved Pittsburgh Steelers, who ranked third in our net total points.
Yeah, super excited about the Steelers quarterback moves. Obviously, this is all within a box of what they could have actually done. I think they executed this very well with bringing in Wilson on a veteran minimum deal. Looking at some of Wilson's stuff from last year, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. That's pretty solid. And I think every Steelers fan would run laps if they knew that's what they had last year. Then trading in for Justin Fields for the future pass Wilson, for a 6th-round pick, I was ringing up, like, give him a 3rd or 4th. Obviously, that 6th round's conditional. So giving just a 6th-round pick for Fields, I was ecstatic about. And then, yeah, you moved off guys that were kind of dead weight in Deontay Johnson, Chukwuma Okorafor, and then Alex, you can have Kenny Pickett for whatever you want to have him for. But yeah, in terms of Fields-Wilson, they can say Wilson's the starter. I think they don't know either of these guys anything, really. So whoever wins the job or looks best in camp preseason will be the starting quarterback. I think Wilson definitely probably has the edge up, but I think there's certainly some room for competition there.
So my read of that is, one, Russell Wilson is out of Edmund deal, so the Steelers don't owe him anything, both in a literal and figurative sense. And
to wait for week 10.
Yeah, so... the second he starts pooping his pants, there will be a very easy way to pivot to Justin Fields.
I think you want to wait until you get 51% of the potential snaps you're going to see that year. Let him play just 9 games and then make the switch.
I don't think Mike Tomlin's going to try to game it.
I guess it doesn't matter that much. Like if you hit your starting quarterback for a 4th-round pick, fine.
Tomlin's got a streak, and
very true.
I don't know. Russell Wilson has lost his fastball. He's not as mobile as he used to be. His performance on throws deep downfield outside the numbers, which were his bread and butter during his prime, don't look very good. He's never been able to throw over the intermediate middle.
So you look at the quarterback and you look at the offensive coordinator, and that's really the only changes that I think that are major with the Steelers. Pretty amazing.
That's not bad.
I got a beef with that one, but we can keep talking quarterbacks.
Let's go, Queen. I want to hear your beef.
I think he sucks.
All right, let's take. Elaborate on that.
Before Roquan Smith came in, he was probably the most underrated defender on the Ravens by far. Or I say underrated, overrated defender on the Ravens. I mean, he still had a high broken tackle miss rate this year. I don't know. I really hope they're not bringing him to be the Mike linebacker and the green dot, because I don't think he can handle that. And I just think we paid too much for him. From what we had last year with Robertson Holcomb, I think was solid. Obviously, they just got hurt, but I don't know. I think that made me mad, but whatever.
I think he's a good player. I don't think he sucks. I'll say that. I agree with you that he might have been a little bit overrated, and I think bringing in Roquan and allowing him to kind of play off of him a bit, I think really, really helped him. I agree with you. I don't love him as the downhill guy, but I think he can cover pretty well for the position. And
he's a good
He's just, it, I agree with you. It's just I would have rather paid for Roquan than paid for Queen.
Right. I mean, last year at the beginning of the year when they had healthy Alandon Roberts, Holcomb, and Quan Alexander, I mean, they held up just fine. And those three guys combined, I think, are what Patrick Queen is what we paid for him. So I think there's probably better ways to do it. But alas, here we are.
Well, going back to my last point, the thing that you cannot argue with is the players lost include Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitch Trubisky. And the players gained include Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. And there was no compensation at all. So we know this list doesn't even include compensation and to be there. I think that's a nice sign. What I want to go to is kind of the next phase of this, because it's one thing to make good quarterback moves, but are there just a couple of names that are better names than the ones that were there before? Or is this actually do we think that Russell Wilson or Justin Fields could be the sustainable answer here? I can't figure out how Justin Fields gets less compensation than Kenny Pickett in a trade. I know it's an extra year, but I don't care.
Yeah, I think Fields is potentially sustainable. I mean, I think, like you said, Russell Wilson, you give him a year, see what he still has left in the tank. But I think they generally think that Fields could be a long-term solution.
Every time I think I'm out on Fields, he pulls me back in. So Fields, maybe it's a wild card. Russell Wilson is, 36, 37? He's very obviously over the hill. Anything more than a stopgap, no way, no shot.
So he's been promised the job. He'll have it for the beginning. But the plan is Fields?
I think so. I mean, they don't know either of them anything. So if both of them presumably are terrible, you go into the year after. I know I keep pushing years out forward, which is great. But, I mean, presumably you have, a third-year Broderick Jones. You drafted a center and brought in a left tackle or something. And the roster you have sitting there is still in really good shape for that, quote-unquote, next young quarterback they bring in if one of these guys doesn't pan out.
Yeah, the tough thing that the situation that they were in, talking about Tomlin's streak and whatever, is that they're not drafting from the top of the draft. And so they made it work with the moves that they just made. And it also potentially means that they're not that likely to bottom out because they have multiple guys that they can kind of potentially lean on. So unless both of them bottom out, and again, with a pretty good defense and that sort of thing, it doesn't feel likely to me that they end up in that sort of top five type pick situation. So it does potentially put them in a similar pinch in a year or two.
Quarterback purgatory.
Yeah. At least they were able to make some moves here with not a ton of commitments, because the worst version of quarterback purgatory is signing Daniel Jones, and they didn't do that. So kudos to them for making some interesting moves at relatively low cost. But I'm not sure how much that moves the needle for them in terms of their ability to compete in the AFC.
Yeah. I think that's just more of a fit of what I think the bigger impact is what Arthur Smith does to this offense than whatever Matt Canada did the last 2 years. But.
I have a fun topic.
Okay.
Oh, I have a fun topic too. Arthur Smith with Russell Wilson, who doesn't throw over the middle,
does seem bad.
What's your topic, Matt?
I think they'll get Russell Wilson on the move, a lot of bootlegs and stuff like that, right? Like, seems to me like it'll be a lot like what Sean Payton did with Russell Wilson, just like basically force him to not suck. My fun topic. I was looking around the list and I was like, oh, you know what? The Texans and Vikings basically exchanged pass rushers in Danielle Hunter and Jonathan Greenard. And I think if you're the Vikings, they're analytically driven front office, you're probably making that move a lot because you're getting 3 years younger, right? Both these players have injury history, but you're going from a 29-year-old that you're signing up for a few years to a 26-year-old. What's interesting to me is, even given that, looking at the methodology used here, even at his age, Danielle Hunter is projected to be a better player over the course of 1, 2, and 3 years compared to Greenard. So I was curious to hear kind of what you guys think of that exchange there, who you'd rather have. I could see fans of both teams being upset about it. I could see them both being happy. I'm kind of curious about that one.
Yeah, the age part does play a factor, although it's not like the difference between a 26-year-old and a 29-year-old, for example, is not necessarily the same as, like, if we were just talking about Patrick Queen, like, he's, what, 24? I have more interest in sort of the age element when you get towards the, like, much younger or much older end of the spectrum. I'm not sure how much it moves the needle for me in that middle range. So in that sense, I guess I feel even more confident in Danielle.
You're, like,
Hunter,
a 4-year contract from, like, 26 to 29 versus, like, 29 to 32. That's not, like, a different...
That's a different tier.
I think what may be happening is that, like, sure, at some point, Danielle Hunter's going to lose a step. But if we're talking about a 3-year window as opposed to a 4, the bottom might be falling out in the 4th year and not the 3rd year within this projection. I could be wrong.
They're both incredibly skilled. They're both sometimes not on the field. I think Danielle Hunter's highs have been higher than Greenard's. So I get that. There's a part of me that likes the idea of having kind of the ascending player, though.
So I will take a little bit of what I said back, because part of the, so I can look into sort of like the guts of the aging stuff that I did. And part of the thing that you need to do aging is to actually have players who are old enough to qualify for those different ages. And the number of players who come in at linebacker, for example, who actually matter for the purposes of this kind of aging conversation drops off a cliff after like 30. So in that sense, I think that that's a totally reasonable argument. Now, if your opinion is like their football contracts, everything's like a 1 or a 2 year deal and you can figure it out from there, then maybe it's not that big of a deal.
Can I ask a totally different question?
What?
Who lost the most?
The Ravens.
But they added Derrick Henry.
Yeah, and I'm super excited about the NCAA football ultimate team backfield they have with former Heisman winners Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, and that'll be a lot of fun, but kind of bleak otherwise.
And this is not like there are other running backs for whom our evaluation for the purposes of this was meaningfully lower than what the public perception is. Cough, cough, Saquon Barkley. But Henry, like, is a meaningful add from our perspective. Even in last year when he was sort of splitting time a little bit, he was pretty productive in terms of like broken tackles and that sort of thing. So he still has
running back in total points, right?
Yeah. So he still has some juice as far as we're concerned, honestly, in a way that some of the other guys who are younger and potentially more exciting signings haven't been, at least in the last couple of years. So I do think that he like is a meaningful offset, but there's a bunch of names we haven't talked about, like Kevin Zeitler, for example.
Well, Zeitler, Simpson, and Moses were all starters on their O-line that are gone, right?
Yeah, it's tough.
Yes.
Good luck.
They also lost Queen, who we talked about, Geno Stone. Yeah, this hurts.
They have a ton of guys that are remaining free agents, too, that seem impactful. Clowney, Musser, they annoy, I guess, old, but...
All that said, when you look at their roster, they still have a good roster, even with a lot of these losses, even if a lot of these people don't come back. I think like the question becomes like, how much of a cheat code is Lamar Jackson in the backfield with Derrick Henry going to be? Because I think the offensive line right now looks like it needs a cheat code. They obviously invested in Linderbaum, but like what else is there?
Well, it's a good year to need a tackle in the draft. So that would be where my head would go for them. But I also, I'm not a Ravens beat writer or anything.
What do they pick?
They're 29?
Yeah.
Oh, I know they're late. I just don't know the exact number off the top of my head.
That was going to be my question, is like, how many of the guys that you're excited about are off the board by then?
It's amazing. There are enough that I still think when you get to that level, there's still some attractive starting level tackles, which it's like when you look at the positional scarcity and how that's kind of taken over now, like there's so many good receivers and tackles, but I have to expect that the tackle run comes first because of the scarcity. Even if you might like a receiver better, you're going to get a different receiver later, which you can't do with the offensive line. Yeah, so we don't think they're going to get a ton worse, right? Adding Henry, losing a couple of linemen. I don't think the Ravens are falling off a cliff next year, but it's something at least to keep an eye on, right?
Yeah, I mean, I still think they beat up on bad competition, make them look better, and then,
oh brother,
when it comes to anything meaningful, they'll, you know, bow out.
I don't know, the Ravens have a bit of a San Antonio Spurs thing going on, where remarkably consistent for years, you think that the bottom has to fall out eventually, but whether that's a year away or four away is hard to say.
At least the Spurs won, though.
Also, like year two in that offense, maybe you know, they don't need to be built the same way up front as they were back in the day when they were doing so much of that different sort of stuff up front. They're a little bit more traditional now. Maybe there's something to that.
Well, and that probably makes some sense with Henry, just because he is not traditional in sort of like the way that he manifests his size and speed, but certainly you're not doing a lot of funky stuff with him in the back.
Outside zone.
Yeah. I would like to have a brief talk about the Falcons, because we talked about Kirk Cousins, but and so he's, you know, sort of the biggest signing, obviously, in terms of money and value and whatever, but also like going and getting a couple of receiver additions and whatever. Like, are the Falcons winning the NFC South? Is that a reasonable expectation?
I hope so, right?
Yeah.
They're the favorites.
So in terms of the way that we evaluated it, they're not actually one of the like top, what, five teams even in terms of the points that they've added, which in part is like Cousins probably would have moved that needle if he had played all of 2023. But, you know, adding Mooney and Rondell Moore and whatever, and they've lost like a couple of smaller guys, they mostly is driven off of them not losing a ton of guys in terms of going to different teams. But I feel like this conversation happens a lot in terms of baseball, where like where you are on the win curve and sort of where are transactions valuable. And for a team like this that was like pretty sort of surprisingly competitive at points over the last couple of years, despite kind of looking inept offensively, I think that these are moves that can at least get you into the playoffs, because you were kind of almost there already and in a relatively uncompetitive division.
Been a lot of investment in receivers, skill players, like you said, besides quarterback, more receivers. I worry that, you know, the previous regime drafted some offensive linemen that they've been able to rely on. But I worry about sort of that aspect. Defense has been in good shape. They've been a good defense, certainly the last couple of years. That's the part that I look at and I wonder about, you know, I guess that's just me. I always look at offensive lines as like, oh, is this going to be enough?
And this team does not, like, they've built from the outside in, from the back forward on defense. Like, they're doing it a little bit differently than the, like, getting a bunch of big dudes up front on both sides.
Yeah, the thing, I like the Kirk Cousins addition, especially for, I know we're not considering cap for the purposes of this exercise, but I think the contract was very reasonable. And I like the receiver additions, because these are players who in their previous stops were probably asked to do a little more lifting than they should have been, but you've got Drake London, you've got Kyle Pitts. You don't necessarily need those guys to carry a bunch of the load for you. So I like the additions of Mooney and Moore as well, even if just as role players.
They got to win that division. If they don't win that division, it's going to be a hard time.
Yes, 100%. Okay, so we've only got a couple more minutes left, so we need to speed run some stuff. I would like to talk about the defending Super Bowl champion, Kansas City Chiefs. So we have them as, what, 21st in net gain, minus 28 total points. They added 3 points, so virtually nothing. I think the biggest signing there is Marquise Brown, if that tells you anything. But they also didn't lose a lot. Like, they lost their punter. They lost Willie Gay. They lost a backup guard. But not a lot of turnover there. And I think you're very okay with that if you're the Chiefs.
I'd say so, being the champion. Basically running it back, especially assuming, like, a lot of the roster is young.
Yeah, I think the Marquise Brown addition is, like, kind of in that same category of some of the guys who the Falcons added in terms of, like, not, he's not going to, like, set the world on fire. But the Chiefs sort of have needed just acceptable receiver play. And Rashee Rice sort of picked that up in the second half of the year last year. But they definitely, like, that's a needle-moving position for them to get just more NFL caliber players out there. So I think that's a pretty big deal. And if you're not losing your big guys and you're retaining those players, I think that that's a big deal.
Player that's not going to move the needle in terms of total points is Irv Smith, who they added. But because he was, what, -4 total points last year, that's not going to, you know, move the rankings up very much. But he's a player that I'm interested in. He can find a role with them doing more of the 12 personnel stuff. They started experimenting, I think, more with tight ends when they realized all of their receivers are garbage. So I wonder how he can fit in there. I mean, it's been a disappointment so far in his career, but if there's one of these players that I like kind of Mahomesifying, he's one of them.
I mean, they run 13 personnel out there quite a bit. So I think that that's a pretty interesting point. And I think the Chiefs make sense as a place to just try skill position players, see if Mahomes can turn them into something. So in that sense, I think that's a good buy.
Yeah. And to Matt's point earlier about what's available in the draft this year, good year to need a wide receiver, good year to need a tackle. And those are probably the biggest holes on their roster right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If they could get one of those tackles, I think that would really set them up well, because that was certainly a rough point for them last year.
Hingsley Suamataya?
I like the upside. You know, I like the upside. Maybe not as much as you. He's got a lot of the same physical characteristics as his cousin Panay. So he's definitely an interesting prospect to look at.
Yep. Moves like a franchise left tackle. Gimme, gimme, gimme.
Some of the bad clips of him, man.
I know they're there. I know they're there. But I am dancing bare-pilled.
Alex, what do you make of the Eagles offseason?
I think there's still some work to be done, and they like to build in the draft as well. I'm not as concerned about the offensive line as I could be. Part of that is just because I trust them to be able to build through the draft. And so if they can, you know, to whatever extent we can sort of project, like, I don't know how much Jason Kelce's ability on the brotherly shove is, like, unique and whatever because of the way that that offense worked. But, like, if that's a thing where that's, like, his, it turns out that he was the cart that drove the, or whatever, the engine for that play, that might be a bigger loss than people. I mean, people think it's a big loss, but that might be, like, a very specific reason why it's a big loss. I still think that they need to figure out third receiver that actually can do something. They've had a real sort of gaping hole there. And then the fact that they have, you know, actually gone and they've tried to get these sort of, like, name off-ball linebackers in, you know, the trade deadline and Devin White here. And that's interesting. I don't know how much it'll move the needle. They really have struggled to fill that position for years. And bringing back Gardner Johnson, sure. I'm not, like, super. I remember last year when we were talking about him from, like, I think a franchise tag perspective, it was just kind of like, yeah, he's more name than productivity, and he's young, and that's the, you know, that has some value. But so I think there's still more moves to be made. I'm still reasonably concerned about the secondary in general, and I definitely would want to see them sort of backfill some guys behind the older guys. So that's really where I would want to see improvement in the draft. But the offense is going to be pretty solid, I think, regardless. It's really about how they fill out the defense.
I'm with the Devin White point. You know, he's not a perfect player by any means, but I do think he brings what's the
Eagles.
But he could play downhill. He can actually be, like, the Eagles' defense has been a little bit spineless, I think, would be the criticism. He can provide a little bit of that. And then they've got some of these other linebackers that can run around and do all the scatterbug type stuff they want to do. But, like, I don't love the player. I don't but I'm not ready to say that he stinks. I think he can rush the passer a little bit. I think that he's actually like a reasonable sized linebacker in run defense for them. So
yeah, the toughness became a huge problem at the end of the year in a way that it wasn't in the first half of the year. I think they could have had a giant hole in terms of pass rush, but I think that they've done with the Bryce Huff move and bringing back Sweat and that sort of thing, like that, they've sort of stabilized that position a lot more than I think that it was going to look like. So they'll probably still address that in the draft, but I feel a lot better about that than I could have.
All right, Alex, this is your baby. Would you like to recap the top five and the bottom five?
Sure. So best teams in terms of what they've added relative to what they've lost so far in the offseason, we have the Rams, Giants, Steelers, Cardinals, and Falcons. We talked about a bunch of those teams over the course of this conversation. And on the back end, the teams that have lost the most, at least so far, relative to what they've added, would be the Ravens, Bills, Vikings, Broncos, and Bucks. Bills, we didn't really talk about, but obviously they have a good amount of turnover on the defensive side of the ball that they have just tried to sort of figure out as well.
All right. For my colleagues, Alex Vigneman, Matt Manichurian, James Weaver, and our executive producer, Justin Stein, I am Bryce Fossler. Thank you for listening to the SIS Off the Charts Football Podcast.